your host, Ben Korn.
There's nothing about Zach Greinke I like. I don't know his stats offhand, no.
Well, that's your own problem.
I know, but his name is ridiculous. Zach Greinke. Don't draft Zach Greinke.
And Chris Welter.
Okay, well, you bring up a lot of good points here, Ben. Very good argument.
I mean, I don't have a good argument. We know this.
And now, Fantasy Baseball Weekly.
Flowers for Frank.
Will Ferrell.
Poop. Poop is a great palindrome, huh? I mean, Poop gets a lot of other credits, but it's one of the best palindromes.
Yes, that is correct.
Fantasy Baseball Weekly. That is Chris Welter and his love of poop and palindromes. I am Ben Korn. We're recording this episode on March 14th. We have a lot to talk about. We're analyzing second base, shortstop, who you should draft, who you should not draft. A couple people to think about: Colton Wong, Dustin Pedroia, Mookie Betts, Hanley Ramirez. The list goes on and on. We've got plenty of people to talk about. Also, Joe Nathan, the Big Panda. What are these guys up to this week? We'll tell you kind of the fantasy impact of them running their mouth. And, maybe we'll dive into a little bit about BABIP.
Yes!
Big Toph likes some BABIP. So, he wants to talk 30 minutes. I'm going to cut him down to about 5. So, get ready. You're going to learn a lot about fantasy baseball in this week's Fantasy Baseball Weekly. Let's get this thing started with the news.
Are you guys ready for the news with Chris Welter? Well, here it is. Take it away, Chris.
Marcus Stroman had high hopes of a breakout season end this week when he tore his ACL. He will miss the entire 2014 season. Mike Minor got rare good news from Dr. James Andrews and will only miss 2 weeks with shoulder inflammation. Denard Span had successful surgery to repair a torn abdominal muscle. He's expected to miss at least the first month of the season. Cliff Lee continues to pitch with a sore elbow and could be headed toward the tough decision of Tommy John surgery. He did suggest that if surgery was necessary, this could be the end of his career. Gavin Floyd re-aggravated his broken elbow from last season and will likely miss this entire 2015 year. This may be bad news for the Floyd family, but it's great news for fantasy players.
Gavin Floyd, you seem really amped up about this guy, but not really on my fantasy radar. Why are you so excited?
Well, that is the point. No one was excited for Gavin Floyd. Injuries have really ramped up this week, and that tends to happen in the spring training. You get a lot of pitchers in particular going down, but that creates a lot of fantasy fallout because new pitchers move into those spots. Gavin Floyd went down probably for the year. That means that Danny Salazar and TJ House will both pitch in the Cleveland rotation to start the year, and I like both of them as potential breakouts. Throw in Trevor Bauer and Carlos Carrasco with Corey Kluber. I love that rotation, and that those back four basically could do what Corey Kluber did last year. They all have potential to blow up that much.
In terms of average draft position, are we thinking we can just stream some of those guys in the Cleveland rotation? Are they going to get picked in most
leagues? Yeah, I don't think they'll get drafted in most standard leagues. Maybe TJ House in the last round, but for the most part, they'll be waiting for you at the end of the draft.
And Marcus Stroman, this seemed like this was probably the biggest news of the week.
Yep.
Kind of a fluke accident where a bunt play turned into an ACL injury. Sounds like the Blue Jays are kind of emotional right now. They're struggling without their leader, Stroman.
Right.
Who should we look at from a fantasy perspective to take the shoes of Stroman?
Yeah, the Blue Jays really got hosed. Going into the year, they kind of knew already that pitching was their weakest position. And, of course, the first major injury is a starting pitcher. But similar to the Cleveland rotation, we've got two young guys that are now both going to get a chance, or most likely, Aaron Sanchez and Daniel Norris. Sanchez had been a reliever last year, but he's a very highly touted prospect and even thought to be the closer this year. But him and Daniel Norris get the chance to start, and I think they both have big breakout potential as well.
And I think we need to watch the Blue Jays as well to see who they pick up for that bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling they're going to make a move, whether it be pulling our boy from the Phillies.
Papelbon's been talking about a lot. They have some prospects to trade for him, too. The only other fallout I wanted to talk about was with Denard Span going down, that opens the door for Michael Taylor, a young prospect outfielder in the Nationals organization, to play full-time, at least for April. And he's another one that he could blow up. He's a speed-power combo that could work very well.
The player profile on Fantasy Baseball Weekly.
Today, it's Colton Wong. He is entering his second full season as the Cardinals' second baseman. At just 24 years old, he had a solid 2014, hitting 12 home runs and stealing 20 bases in only 433 plate appearances. His stats were a bit of a surprise since he has always hit for average in the minors while only mustering a 236 average in the majors so far. The power he showed last year was also a bit of a surprise. A Hawaiian native and born into baseball family, Colton is a bit of an oddball as he throws right-handed but hits left-handed. Along with Pedroia and Altuve, Wong is a proud member of the short and stout clan of second basemen as he stands at just 5'9". Does his power continue? Will his average climb higher? Or will he hit the dreaded sophomore slump? Based on his ADP of 115, most people believe his stats arrow is pointing up.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris, my arrow is definitely pointing towards Wong as well.
You're saying you got a Woody for Wong?
Yes.
Oh,
yes, I am.
Look out, Wong. Ben's coming for you.
Fantasy Baseball Weekly, we now transition ourselves to how we feel about the shortstop position. And just looking at the names on the board, it's very top-heavy. You're looking at the top three, maybe four guys that really have some potential for your team. And then after that, it really drops off. So you look at number one is Hanley Ramirez right now, going at the average pick of 23. With him is Troy Tulowitzki. Average pick of 24. Ian Desmond comes off the board at 27. Then it drops pretty heavily down to 55 for Jose Reyes. Alexi Ramirez, 104. Elvis Andrus, 126. Starlin Castro, 132. Ben Zobrist then comes off the board at 147. Jimmy Rollins, 153. And Danny Santana for Minnesota, 182. Xander Bogaerts, 184. Javier Baez, 187. Johnny Peralta, 190. So when you look at this list, Chris, I mean, do you go for those top three? I mean, it seems like if you want somebody that's going to be productive at the shortstop position, you want those top three guys.
Yeah, it's a tricky position. I mean, a standard league is going to have 12 teams, and you're talking, that means somebody starting shortstop is going to get drafted around the 200th pick. That's really late. Personally, I don't like taking a shortstop that high. They're a little bit more injury prone, and they just don't play as much. So I'd rather just wait it out.
And it seems like you have an interesting value pick in Troy Tulowitzki, currently going off the board between 24 and 28. I mean, is it possible that a value pick can go off the board that early?
Yeah, it's weird to say that, right? But and again, I typically am going to wait on shortstop this year. But where Troy Tulowitzki is going, I really like that pick at 28. He can be the best player in baseball. And the big argument against him is his injury woes, his injury concerns. Now, we play mostly in weekly leagues, head-to-head. So really all you want Troy for is the playoffs, right? You want him for September. So you're just sort of taking a risk that he's going to be healthy in September. And for the best player in baseball or the best hitter in baseball, I think that's worth the risk. And then you just have to fight through when he's injured.
Well, and I like the idea of kind of partnering Troy Tulowitzki with a Brandon Crawford or somebody that gives you 162 games. Not very good. I mean, his average as a career is only 246 for Brandon Crawford.
Yeah, not too much upside there.
There's not a lot of upside. You could be correct, but he is 27. He had his best year ever last year. He hit 10 home runs, had 70 RBIs. You know, he can get you through the regular season so that if Troy comes back, you've got Troy sitting there at shortstop for the postseason. Just saying, I think that's a nice 1-2 punch, Brando and Troy.
No, you're right. I don't know that I would go Brandon Crawford in that situation, but if you draft Troy Tulowitzki or even Hanley for that part, you want a decent backup ready to roll.
And personally, I like Hanley Ramirez a lot. You know, you look at him as a shortstop, which he'll still have shortstop availability, but he also is an outfielder. So you're getting kind of that combo platter of like, okay, well now I have, you know, Brandon Crawford's all of a sudden going off. Not likely. I get that.
Yeah.
But if for some reason Brandon Crawford is going off, which he had a pretty nice postseason last year, so I'm getting on the Brandon train. But you got somebody like Brandon Crawford going off, say, okay, maybe I'll move Hanley to outfield. Mm-hmm. And now you've got some flexibility there, which I really like with Hanley.
Right. Position eligibility is a key strategic move, particularly, again, for the head-to-head weekly leagues.
Somebody a little bit further back that you like as a sleeper?
I really like Xander Bogaerts this year. You know, a very interesting fact. Now, halfway through the season, he got switched from shortstop to third base last year. Let me read you the stats for both when he played shortstop and when he played third base. For shortstop, he had 224 plate appearances with 15 doubles, a 304 average, and an 11% walk rate, which is pretty consistent to his minor league numbers. Then he moved to third base, and in 375 plate appearances, he had 14 doubles, a 205 average, and a 4% walk rate. Now, I'm not saying it was just because of the move, but it clearly didn't help. And with him moving back to shortstop, which is his natural position, you know, I think he'll be more comfortable this year. It's his second year, so he'll just have a little bit less on his shoulders, a little bit less pressure. I like him to really explode. And when you're talking ADP of 182, that's when you're drafting your bench players, you know, and then you could get your starting shortstop there.
Yeah, Xander's definitely somebody who, if you're looking for upside, he has it. One thing that worries me about Xander is a lot of those numbers that were really strong was when the Red Sox were so far out of it that it didn't matter at all.
Right.
You know, where he came back to shortstop, it's like, all right, Xander's playing really good. Yeah, there's nothing on the line to be playing good. So now that the Red Sox are, you know, in title contention possibilities, let's see what Bogaerts brings.
And they have a better lineup, too. You know, all signs point to up for Xander Bogaerts.
You know, I do like Javier Baez. I don't like the fact that he might be starting in the minors because he can't seem to hit the ball or, you know, stop striking out is, I guess, a better way to put it. But talk about a guy that if you're looking for some home runs, if he can start to see the ball a little bit better and get some base knocks in there with those home runs. Javier Baez currently going at 187 right behind Xander. I do believe Xander's probably a better bet if you're looking for consistency. But Javier Baez definitely has the ability that if he can play well, you know, and get some playing time regularly, 162 games, you might be looking at 30 home runs for Javier Baez.
Yeah, Javier definitely has a higher upside than Xander Bogaerts. But the dude just strikes out too much, and the coaches have tried to change his approach, and he won't change. He struck out 41% of the time last year. That's a good 25% above league average, or 50% above league average even. And I think what you can do with Javier Baez is I think he'll get drafted and then dropped in the first month because he'll either be terrible or be in the minors. I would check your waiver wires come May 1st, and you might be able to find Javier there.
Sarah Coop with the scoop.
Will Ferrell entertain the masses on Thursday by playing every single position on the baseball field? 10 different baseball teams saw an appearance from Ferrell. According to Ferrell, these teams need a clubhouse presence. And by presence, I mean a 47-year-old flabby guy who doesn't know how to play. Memorabilia from the day will be sold, and the money will be donated to Stand Up to Cancer. Jerry Seinfeld decided to get his 2 cents in about Alex Rodriguez and his epic return. It's not very interesting. Thanks, Jerry. Gio Gonzalez has been a little bored this spring training, so he decided to spruce things up with a little meow. He bet his teammate Max Scherzer that he could get 10 meows into his game interview. Gio did it, replacing now with meow a total of 10 times. I want to do that right now.
I guess the time is meow to talk more about Will Ferrell. And I guess I don't understand. Is this a good thing for baseball? Having Will Ferrell just change spring training for a day?
I thought it was great. I know John Madden felt like he needed to come out and say how terrible it was for the game of baseball that he doesn't really know much about. But, you know, John Madden should stick to his blowhard stuff for football.
I mean, he does have some nice drawing skills.
No, I thought it was great. It wasn't particularly funny with Will Ferrell. They just sort of went through the process. But, hey, they sold more tickets to spring training games. They got more people to watch spring training games. I don't see what's wrong with that.
Well, I guess the feeling from the players was they enjoyed it. It kind of broke the monotony of spring training a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't want this to turn into every time somebody has a new movie coming out, all of a sudden they're going to play all these positions of spring training. Hopefully this is a one-and-done thing.
No, I mean, I think it was a very rare thing. It was to honor Bert Campaneris, who played all 10 positional plays
back in 1956 or something like that. It's the only time it's ever been done professionally. So it was to honor that. I don't see it happening all the time.
All right. Fantasy Baseball Weekly, we now turn towards second base. So second base has a good crop of players that I think you can choose from. When you look at the list of second basemen, it all begins with Robinson Cano. Right now, he's currently going the 15th pick in the draft. He gets things started at second base. And then Jose Altuve comes off the board right after him at 16. Anthony Rendon, 18. So once the second basemen start going off the board, they start flying. So those three are kind of the main three that go off the board first. Then it tends to be Ian Kinsler at 55, D. Gordon at 63. Brian Dozier goes off at 86, Dustin Pedroia 89, Mookie Betts at 90, Jason Kipnis 96, then Colton Wong at 115, Daniel Murphy at 127, Josh Harrison 131, and Ben Zobrist comes off the board at 147. So you look at that list of guys, is Robinson Cano worth being the number one guy coming off the board? Do you feel like Robinson Cano is going to bring it this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he could even have a little bit more power than he did last year. I think Seattle, yes, it's a big ballpark, but it usually doesn't hurt people's power as much as it did last year.
Well, that's the surprising thing about Robinson is it was like, all right, he's this great home run hitter at the second base position. And then, yeah, he still ended up being a quality second baseman, but he wasn't Robinson Cano quality. So the question is, was that a blip in his trajectory north, or is he now taking that downhill?
I mean, he's on the downhill, but it's not going to be incredibly rough downhill. You know, a big reason that he's safe at that spot is he's so consistent. He rarely gets hurt. He's going to put up a 300 average with double-digit home runs, 100 RBIs. And really, everybody else at second base is somewhat of a wild card. Anthony Rendon, he was great, did it for 1 year. Jose Altuve, maybe he's done it for 2 years, but he hasn't been a top 20 player for 2 years. So there's so much risk there. I'm happy to take Robinson Cano and be safe.
Am I wrong to think that Dustin Pedroia will also have a comeback year?
Man, I hope so. I love Petey. I know he's had some comments that he feels very strong and feels like his thumb is back to full force. Will that work for a guy who's 5'9 and 31 years old to return to power form?
Part of the short and stout crew.
He is part of the short and stout crew. Unfortunately, he's the only power hitter of the short and stout crew. So I'm worried that it won't come back, unfortunately. I hope him the best, but I'm worried.
We talked about Colton Wong in the player profile. This is a guy that, personally, I think will not have the power that he had last year. I hope to see his average go up to 270, 280. Will that be worth a 115 average pick? Maybe. I guess it all depends on, you know, when I can get a second baseman, but I'm not leaning towards picking up Colton Wong right now.
It's funny, I like him where he's being drafted, but it's tough if you're designing your team and you sort of have needs at that point. Will he give you home runs? Will he give you doubles? Will he give you average? Like, I don't know. So he's gonna be a tough guy to fit into your squad. But I agree. I think he traded his average for higher power last year, and I have a feeling the Cardinals don't like to do that. So I have a feeling the Cardinals are going to get him back on track with high on base and high contact rates, and that'll lower his home run total.
So who's the guy that you're looking at that is being drafted at a nice position?
I mean, he feels a little bit under the radar, even though he's in the top 100. I really like Brian Dozier this year. He's going around 82 of an ADP, but he had a serious breakout last year. Now his average is a little bit low. He probably won't hit you more than 250, but he literally does everything else. Last year he had 23 home runs, 112 runs, which almost led the league, to go along with 21 stolen bases, 33 doubles. Literally, he's filling up the stat sheet for you. And actually, his BABIP was a little bit low, so he only had a 269 BABIP last year. If that comes back up to 300, his average could get up to 260, and he could be a top three second baseman really easily.
When you look at somebody like Brian Dozier and Dustin Pedroia, Dozier's at 86, Petey's being drafted around 89.
Yeah, wow.
Who do you pick there?
It's Dozier. It's not even close. I mean, Petey would have to return to full form just to get to where what Dozier did last year.
Mookie Betts. This is a guy that everybody's fallen in love with. We're not sure even he'll be playing full time.
Yeah, it's up in the air.
But Betts is being drafted 90 on the average pick, so
that makes no sense.
So Dozier blows him away as well.
That makes
mind.
No sense. Yeah, I just there's too much risk with Mookie. Is he going to play? Is he going to slump? I mean, he's done it for what, a month in the regulars, so in the major league. So yeah, I'd avoid Mookie Betts at that point.
D. Gordon is the guy that's being drafted above Dozier.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Dozier is more valuable to the team than D. Gordon?
It depends a little bit on your league. If you're playing in a roto league and you don't have steals anywhere else, sure, I get it. Go for D. Gordon. But literally all he gives you is stolen bases. So if you're in any other type of head-to-head or points league, he's terrible. You know, last year he only had 2 home runs and 24 doubles. Like literally he just hits little choppers and that's it. So that's just not going to help you out. You know, the stolen bases are great, but that's only one category. And I know he had a decent average last year, but in 2013, he had a .234 average. So if he goes anywhere near that again, he could be a he could be a major bust. And you want to avoid that in your top 100 picks.
You know, one thing that we kind of talked about a little bit in the shortstop, because a lot of times shortstop, second baseman, third base, they tend to have multiple position availability.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my name, bro, Ben Zobrist.
Oh,
Ben Zobrist, my name's Ben Korn. I think just that alone, I want to have him on my team. But Ben Zobrist, he has availability at second base, shortstop, outfield. Again, a model of consistency. At this point in his career, he's not lighting the world on fire, so the upside is not really there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at him being drafted at 147, I just like that pick. I like that... you know, he's on a new team at Oakland. Oakland, you know, you're not going to get a ton of home runs out of Oakland, but there's, you know, that belief that they're going to do whatever it takes to score runs, get RBIs. And Ben Zobrist is kind of one of those guys that just bleeds baseball and will do whatever it takes to help out that athletics organization.
Yeah, I know we talked about it with Hanley a little bit. The multi-positional eligibility can be very good for strategy and sort of in-season moves. There's just no upside with Zobrist, so I'd much rather have him as sort of a bench utility guy than your starting second baseman or your starting shortstop.
Fine. I will accept that, Chris, when I beat you.
Okay, good luck.
So would you rather have Zobrist or would you rather have Howie Kendrick?
Howie Kendrick.
Because I think Howie Kendrick, he's being drafted 181.
Right.
That seems way low for Howie Kendrick.
Yeah, he kind of had a career year last year, very sneakily, and I don't know that he'll repeat it, but I just trust Kendrick a little bit more to give you double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases, whereas Zobrist, you know, I don't know that he'll give you either of those.
And then is there somebody deep in the draft that you're looking at?
Yeah, I'm starting, just this past week, I've been kind of getting excited about Jed Jerko. You know, he's a guy, it's going to be his third full major league season. Now, he really hit a sophomore slump last year, which is common. A lot of guys that, you know, that's when the pitchers adjust to them and they need to readjust to the pitchers. And the second year can be a little bit difficult. But in 2013, he had 23 home runs. And from the second base position, you know, that's rare. That's really rare to find power in the second base. And there were some small signs of improvement last year, even during the slump. His plate discipline improved with his K rate going down, his walk rate going up. And then also, as we've talked about, the Padres lineup is a lot better. So the counting numbers, the runs, the RBIs, those will probably go up too. And Jerko's being drafted around 232, an ADP of 232. That is way far in the back. And that's basically your bench players, your relief pitchers. So a guy that could hit you 20, 25 home runs from the second base position, that's a good spot to draft him.
And something to look at when it comes to Jerko, he's average drafted 96% of drafts. So even though he's sitting at, you know, average draft position of 244, that means he's making pretty much everybody's draft. People that are getting drafted above him, Marcus Semien, only 5% of people are drafting him, even though his average draft position is also 244. So it just goes to show you that he's on people's radar. You're going to need to draft him. You're not going to be able to pick him up in free agency, but I think that's a really good pick.
He's worth it there.
Other names that I think are interesting, Brandon Phillips is going 249. I also think he could have a decent year. Brad Miller has had a pretty decent spring training, so keep him on your radar at 243.
Right, it's only the fourth year in a row of him having a decent spring training to get people excited.
I mean, I got excited last year, and it failed me. But, I mean, let's go Brad Miller, Seattle.
Yeah, good luck.
But a lot of the I find second base to be a lot deeper than, say, shortstop. I think you can find a nice second baseman, maybe one or two of those deep guys that one of them will have a decent year for you.
Yeah, absolutely. If you end up waiting on second base, you won't be too disappointed at the end of the draft.
Let's dive deeper in the classroom.
For today's lesson, we're talking BABIP. BABIP stands for batting average on balls in play. Fantasy owners love this stat because it gives you an idea if a batter or pitcher tended to be luckier last year and thus might not be able to put up the same numbers this year as last. The equation for BABIP is hits minus home runs divided by the sum of at-bats minus strikeouts minus home runs plus sacrifice flies. When you look at pitchers to like this year because they struggled with BABIP last year and should have that number increase, Strasburg, Scherzer, Brandon McCarthy, Justin Verlander, Wade Miley, Corey Kluber, and Phil Hughes. Some batters with a potential BABIP bounce back: Kendrys Morales, Chris Davis, Mike Moustakas, and Carlos Santana. It might be wise, I guess, for us to take a deeper dive into this BABIP discussion. I didn't think that broke it down for the layman.
Right. Well, let me lay down some layman terms. Basically, BABIP is your average on the balls you put into the playing field.
So if you look at that for, say, a batter, I don't know, Freddie Freeman, you know, he's always had a really high BABIP.
Right. So the batters tend to have a higher variance on their BABIP, and they can hold on to a higher or lower BABIP depending on their skill set. And the two major things that will affect this for the hitters is their speed and then their hit tool, also kind of if they're hitting into the shift or not. So you bring up Freddie Freeman. He's a great example. He actually had a 339 BABIP last year, and that's his career average, which is unusual. I think we said, the average BABIP for a pitcher or batter is about 300. So Freddie Freeman's much higher than that. So you think immediately, oh, that means he's going to come back down to 300. Not the case with Freddie Freeman. He actually, in 2014, had a 350 BABIP. In 2013, had a 370 BABIP. So he commonly or typically will have a very high BABIP. And one way to tell that with him is he leads the majors in line drive percentage, meaning basically he's got a great hit tool. He knows where to hit the ball, and he crushes the ball when he hits it. So it's more likely to find a gap. Other players similar to this, it's all the great hitters. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt, Troy Tulowitzki, Andrew McCutchen, they all regularly have higher BABIP. So you shouldn't expect them to regress.
So analyzing what you just told me, as you look at BABIP numbers, you can almost tell based on hit tools, based on speed, who has a higher chance of regressing and who doesn't?
Right. So guys like Freddie Freeman aren't going to regress. Similar guys, you know, to move over to the speed topic, somebody like Jose Altuve is a great example of they have a high BABIP because of their speed. You know, and he's done it every year. In 2012, this is Altuve again. In 2012, he had a 320 BABIP. In 2013, he had a 315 BABIP. Last year, he had a 360 BABIP. So maybe it was a little high last year, but he'll likely hold on to a 320 or 330 BABIP. Similar guys that hold on to a high BABIP because of speed are Christian Yelich, Leonis Martin, Michael Bourne. All these guys you can expect to have a higher than 300 BABIP.
And in terms of the shift, I know a big thing with baseball these days is, do we allow the shift? How much shifting can we do in the outfield, or in the infield, excuse me? Brian McCann, he seems like a guy that has a really low BABIP. I think he's a guy that should be able to return to 300 BABIP, but you don't think so?
No, it's funny. When you made a list of potential bounce-back guys on BABIP, you basically listed all the most heavily shifted players. Now, the first two things we talked about were why someone would hold on to a high BABIP. If someone's getting shifted, it's a reason they're going to hold on to a lower than 300 BABIP, basically because they're hitting into the shift and they don't know how to hit the ball the other way. So they're hitting into a smaller area with more people in it. You're just going to get less base hits. It's just the way it works. So I know Brian McCann, he's actually the exact case of why the shift can ruin your BABIP. In 2010, 2009, he was a straight 300 BABIP guy. Then in 2011, that's when teams really started doing the shift, thanks to Joe Maddon and his wisdom. So you really start to see Brian McCann's BABIP fall. From 2011, he had 287. 2012, he went down to 234. 2013, he's at 261. Then just last year, he was back down to 230. So I think, unfortunately, he can't adjust to the shift, and he's going to stick around at 240, 250 BABIP, which kind of means there's no way he's going above a 250 average. That's like the peak of what Brian McCann can get.
And before we switch gears towards pitchers, some guys, we listed who you should look out for and who you should draft based on BABIP. Some people that you might want to be afraid of based simply on some BABIP, Jose Abreu, Danny Santana, Adam Eaton. These are guys that this BABIP, they just happened to be hitting into the right spots last year. We couldn't differentiate based on speed or their hitting tools. So these are guys that just seemed to do well last year that probably have a decent chance to regress.
Jose Abreu, he's a power guy, so you'd think his hit tool wouldn't be as good. He had a 350 BABIP last year, so that might come down. Probably the most obvious regression candidate is Danny Santana, had the highest BABIP in the league at 405 last year. So he's certainly going to come down. He could drop 100 points in both his average and BABIP.
And when you look at pitchers, what is it? How do you look at BABIP from a pitching perspective?
So it's a little more simplified, honestly. There's just not as much fluctuation with pitchers. They tend to almost always regress back to a 300 BABIP. Now, the only cases where you can expect guys to be high or a low BABIP, are very good pitchers that have proven it year in and year out. Examples of this are like Johnny Cueto, Felix Hernandez, Doug Fister. Particularly Johnny Cueto, I think he has a 230 BABIP, which means you'd look at it initially and think, oh, he's getting lucky. A lot of his base hits should be falling, and they're not. But he's had a 230 BABIP for about 4 or 5 straight years. So you can just assume that's the way he is. He must do it with deception. I don't know how he does it, but aside from these top tier players, you can almost assume a pitcher is going to get back to a 300 BABIP at some point.
And some guys on the pitching side that you should somewhat be afraid of because they had really low BABIPs but haven't proven it in the past. Shelby Miller, Edinson Volquez, Garrett Richards, Sonny Gray. These are a couple of names to watch out for on the pitching side.
Put a sock in it!
This is Joe Nathan. It doesn't bother me. It's not a part of my life. They're not a part of my life, period.
That's Peter Burton playing Joe Nathan after Joe Nathan, the closer for the Detroit Tigers, failed to close a game properly. He gave up 6 runs, 4 of them earned, as his team lost 6-5. And the Detroit Tigers fans at a spring training game didn't seem to like it very much, so they booed him. And when asked after the game, you know, what he felt about being booed at a spring training game, that's what Joe Nathan replied. Joe Nathan seems like he's been a good guy over the course of, 25 years of playing in professional sports. What do you think is going through his head here? Because I think this affects his fantasy value. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you never want to trash talk the fans. Again, I stated this last week. I think Joaquin Soria will be the closer within a month. And this is only helping my opinion.
And I was a fan of Joe Nathan. I think, jumping on your bandwagon right now.
This is the almighty panda, Pablo Sandoval. Who is Aubrey Huff?
That's Peter Burton playing Pablo Sandoval, as Pablo Sandoval's gotten himself into quite the predicament. It all started when Pablo Sandoval talked about how he's not going to miss anybody on the Giants, that the only two people he's going to miss on the Giants are Hunter Pence and the manager. And then Aubrey Huff came out and said it's all about Pablo Sandoval and Pablo Sandoval's world, that, you know, this doesn't surprise him because Pablo Sandoval only cares about himself. And then Pablo Sandoval responds by saying he doesn't even know who Aubrey Huff was, even though Aubrey Huff was his teammate. So on a fantasy perspective, does this change the way you draft Pablo Sandoval?
No, it doesn't change it. It makes me worry if I'm a Red Sox fan because they love the clubhouse chemistry. And this guy is not a chemistry type player, as he's comes in fat and then trash talks his old team.
So it sounds like he will just enjoy Dusty Pedroia, and that's it. He's going to pick his one friend that he'll have right. on the team. Yeah, no, that kind of scares me a little bit about Pablo if he's already causing a ruckus and he hasn't even played a regular season game. But Chris, I think this brings us to the end of Fantasy Baseball Weekly.
Already?
It's already over.
Wrapping it up?
I think we got to wrap it up. We've been able to talk for 30 minutes or so. I think we've knocked out a couple things. Anything change in the way you're looking at shortstops? Are you picking Hanley over Tulo?
No, I'm still waiting on shortstops.
Are you picking Josh Harrison to be your MVP?
No, he's a major regression candidate.
Okay, that's Chris Welter and his depth of knowledge.
And remember, Ben, you want to wrap up that Wong.
I will never wrap up my Wong. I will point my arrow north. That's another edition of Fantasy Baseball Weekly. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week, we've got first base, third base, more player profiles, and many, many more exciting things to bring to the table. So, as per usual, thank you so much for shipping up to Boston! I'm a sailor!